Hello everybody, this is special education information. Today's parrot is my African gray and his name is Sterling. He likes to contribute sometimes, so you may hear him mumbling in the background. Today I want to cover paraprofessionals. I give a huge shout out to those paraprofessionals that rock. And what do I mean by a paraprofessional that rocks? And I think it's one that lives up to expectations of their position, but also have a wonderful tendency to go a little bit above and beyond. I have worked with paraprofessionals, unfortunately, who stuck not only to the letter of their contract, but even when something was extremely pushing, they would not step in and help out. And if it's not their job, you can't really be upset with them, but you probably might be thinking in your head that situation could have been handled easier if my paraprofessional was willing to step up. That's rare. Like I said, I've worked with only one in all this time, and that paraprofessional, well, I don't want to go into that much detail about her. So in general, the shout out I have for paraprofessionals is just they help classrooms with special needs kids, as well as when they are teamed one-to-one with a special need kid in a mainstream setting. Those paraprofessionals can keep the classroom ticking. Because, you know, if you have six or eight or more students in your classroom, then you need an extra pair of hands to help with materials, to help with student behavior, to just keep company for a kid, to help adapt materials. I mean, they have a lot of responsibility that goes on their shoulders. And sometimes you do get a para who decides to just sit there and read their book and don't do anything about the student in the classroom. And sometimes you feel like you have another student in your classroom with that para being the way they are. But I keep kind of going to the negatives, and I really shouldn't, because I have had the most awesome paraprofessionals in my career. I had one who would stay behind and help me prep materials. I mean, they'd work on their own time, and I didn't ask for that. I didn't, because it's not fair to them to stick behind their letter of the end of the contract for the day. But sometimes they chose to because they were in the middle of adapting it already, and they just wanted to finish it. They saw I was stressed out about something and decided that they would help take over some of the work I was doing that was possible for them. Sometimes they're absolutely wonderful with the students. They just click in so well. And I have been so lucky that most of my paras have been that kind of person that just clicks with the students. Even when the para feels a little bit overwhelmed, because sometimes students' behaviors do get a little bit tricky to manage, they have come to me and said, what's a better way of handling it? And I love that because they're coming to me about that. Now, there's one thing that some schools get really, they don't want paras to necessarily know what the IEP goals are. I kind of disagree with that. I don't give detailed details, but I will say the student's working on writing numbers 1 through 5. And that's all they need to know, but I know that that's also an IEP goal. So in that sense, paras who are like that, they're just most awesome. So if you're a paraprofessional or training to be one, don't feel that you have to do any of that stuff unless it's part of that child's specific needs. But you do need to have certain qualifications in your mind, character, if you will, to do okay and be okay with working with students who have special needs. Because sometimes you're going to step into a situation, especially say it's the middle of the school year and you're subbing in, where you really don't know what you're getting, and maybe they just kind of tossed you in and forgot to do the training. I hope that never happens, but if it does, please go to who your primary teacher is and ask them. Maybe not ask them for the IEP goals. They may not feel that they can share them, but maybe ask them some tips on managing that particular child's behaviors or that particular child's needs. That would be great. I would love it if every paraprofessional I work with would come to me and say, how can I do this better? How can I make this easier on myself? So paras, also you have to remember, you make kids being mainstream. Sometimes the only way they can be successful is with a good one-to-one paraprofessional working with them. A student paraprofessional is what I've always heard it called. You make it possible for that kid to be around their peers, to do schoolwork that's similar to their peers or the same as their peers. Just appreciate the goodness of your heart and what you're doing. Because I know sometimes for people who aren't familiar with paraprofessionals, they used to call them teacher aides or student aides. But we've moved on to paraprofessionals because they are a profession that should be dignified and looked at as a good thing. So anyway, as a para, you're going to have to do some teaching, not for the whole classroom. If it's your one-to-one, maybe read stories to the whole classroom. But any academic kind of work should be going through the teacher, unless it's already been agreed that you will do some academic work. So toileting, a lot of students need to be toileted and have assistance in doing that. Sometimes it's simple, just undoing buttons. We really try hard to keep parents from sending kids who are not fully toileted yet with buttons or zippers or anything like that until they are and they can undo the buttons themselves. Also, it's important that you stay in touch with the IEP team. That is really crucial for me, is getting information about my students that maybe I wasn't catching or I had not had time to write them down. So that was always good to maybe have a 15-minute break in there somewhere during the day that you and your teacher can meet up. I know that paraprofessionals, they do a lot of transporting kids, like if they're in a wheelchair or they're walking with a walker or any kind of thing like that, just to keep them safe. So you have a really, really challenging job ahead of you if you're going into it, and if you're already doing it, you know. But it's a wonderful job, and I just pray and hope that whoever the IEP team is, that they appreciate everything you're doing for that particular kid or the classroom. And now I want to kind of throw a shout out for specialists that work with special needs teachers. Those are your teachers that are occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech and language therapists, teachers who work with visually impaired kids, teachers who work with hearing impaired kids. I'm sure I'm missing some. I am sorry if I do. But hopefully you'll know that this applies to you also, even if I've missed you. Okay, what do specialists get to do and how do they play into the team? Hopefully everything that a therapist or other specialist overlaps other specialists' work, if there's more than one, and hopefully they overlap with the teacher needs for that student as well. So I've seen occupational therapists who help teach kids how to tie shoes, and then ideally they teach the teacher how they're teaching how to do it, or a paraprofessional, and then that way that experience can go on and off throughout the day with the students that they're working with. And that would go for all the specialties. Whatever skills they're working on, hopefully it gets built into their day. So they will be working closely with a SPED teacher, special education teacher. We call that SPED sometimes, S-P-E-D. Hopefully all the SPED teachers and general ed teacher, if one is involved, will also partake in helping students achieve their IEP goals throughout the day. Specialists can be your best friend in a lot of ways, teachers and parents. Specialists can help develop lesson plans, make them so that they're readable and doable by anyone, so they can send that plan on to parents as well as the gen ed teacher, as well as the paraprofessional. SPED teachers, specialist teachers, have to be able to control behavior when they're working one-to-one. And I can tell you, when I was doing itinerant work, there were days where I just got so kind of crazy because for example, I had a student that I was seeing, and I had an hour with the student, and I had to take the student from their classroom across the tarmac and into the special education classroom where my materials were located. Only as we were going across, he was first grade. He just sat down. Just sat down, middle of the basketball markings of the tarmac or blacktop, and he wouldn't get up. It was like nothing I was able to do in the middle of nowhere to get this kid to stand up and keep going. And he wasn't like crying or having any kind of temper tantrum or other poor behaviors. He just sat down. I'm done for the day. And so that was definitely an issue of controlling behavior before I could actually work with the child. I had another one who she would kind of attack you. She didn't hurt so much. It's just she would get upset with whatever she was doing and decide she wasn't going to do it anymore. And if you insisted, she got her hands on your arm. She'd just hold on. So that was another difficult situation, but it is part of the job, and it is something that you just have to write off on the day's work. Student sat down on the blacktop and wouldn't move for 30 minutes. Luckily, it wasn't too hot that day. Anyway, so that is something you have to have patience to deal with, as well as managing their behavior. I kind of think of that as sort of the same thing. If you're managing a student's behavior because it is directly affecting their lessons, you have to kind of be patient with them and not just kind of pound in, I have to do this, I have to do this, you got to stand up, we got to go, and just kind of wait it out. So that's two areas. You have to have the patience to deal with controlling the behavior as well as controlling the behavior. What else do specialists get to do? We get to support them in the classroom. So sometimes I would have to go into the classroom to set it up with the kid, make sure they're sitting in the right area, lots of different things like that. And then I had to work with a student who did not want to come out of her classroom, period. She was going to sit right there. So one time I went in, because she was high school, and high schools are so easily embarrassed. And so never embarrass them if you can avoid it. But I went into her classroom and I sat down in the chair behind her and figured I'd just work on IEP goals that were involved with doing well in the classroom. She was so mad at me. So that didn't work out too well. But I'll give you a little sidestep. This is what she did, or we did, to fix the problem. I went to the principal and he called her out of class and down to the front office and acted that like she was completely in trouble, just big time. Well, she loved that because I guess it was kind of cool to be on the outside edge of teacher's approval. And so getting called down to the office meant, wow, she's getting in trouble a lot. And it actually helped her be more popular. And I was very much for kids interacting with her and kind of teaching her social skills. But I do have to say that that was one of the more creative times that we came up with to ensure that she would come out of the classroom and work with me. And she knew where to go. She'd come out of the classroom and walk right to the room that I had there to work with the students. So that was pretty crazy and kind of fun. So anyway, as a specialist, you need to be open to being creative to get what you need from the students, or actually more of giving to them what they need to do well in school. And kind of on a side note, how many times have you heard people say to you or ask, you must be so patient? And I really kind of started getting cynical on that, and maybe that's not the best attitude for me to have, because I want to set a good example as a teacher and a professional who works with children who have special needs. But when you hear it all the time, they don't ask things like, oh, how did you become a special ed teacher? Or what's your favorite thing to do with the students? Or I don't know, things that are not the statement, you must be so patient. And why does that bother me? I think we're all human, and I don't think that any of us avoid being impatient. I think most of us tend to be patient with the situations that we're in. I could be wrong, but I kind of hope I'm not. And so what do we do when people say that to us? Do we just say, oh yeah, and agree? I kind of do that some of the time. But I think what I want to start doing is asking, why do you think that? And see what their answer is. Is it that they have a stereotype about our students, our children, or they just don't know what else to say? I think I want to collect those responses and see what I come up with. And maybe that can lead to a change in the outside world's point of view of what we do. I do admit that the longer I taught, no, I can't say. I was going to say that the longer I taught, I got more patient. But I don't think that's true. I think in the beginning, you're more patient because you're fresh out of school, you're fresh out of teaching, and all situations are new. And you're kind of curious about it. At least I was curious. How am I going to handle this particular situation? But then you're teaching for a while. You kind of start running into those situations with other students. And sometimes it can be frustrating. I'm not saying I act out on that frustration on a student. Never, never, never. But sometimes in the back of my head, I'll think, why does this keep happening? Or how can I change the situation to work? So maybe if you use that frustration for good, as in you're talking in your head about what are better ways to handle the situation, or if you don't know, then you go and you find the answer for that as best you can. But yeah, I think, you know, if it's like the 10th time something's happened, then yeah, you might be a little bit more impatient. But at the same time, I know there are situations where I am drawing from my insides to create that patience on my outside, and it can be strange situations where that occur. And one of the ones that I ran into, which I thought was peculiar, I had taken my students out to a mall and their meal area, the food court, and I had a student. She was small and kind of weak fingers, but I've been teaching her how to open bags of chips, because she loved chips and it was motivating for her. So I'm building the student's finger strength, coordination, and she got a reward at the end of it that I didn't give to her directly. She earned it by getting those chips open. Anyway, so we're at this food court and it's a little bit busy, not too bad. And my student starts trying to open the chips. Well, she's having a hard time for this particular incident. I don't know why. And so she starts screaming and kind of hitting the bag of chips. And I didn't stop her, because if those chips were itty bitty tiny by the time she's done, she kind of did it to herself, but she'd still enjoy them. And so she starts yelling at this bag and just flailing it around. And these people around us were first they started off by staring. Then they were giving me evil glares because I'm letting this student get so angry over a bag of chips that I could open easily. But I was like, no, that's not the point. And so this one lady finally, and I'm going to help your child, she thought she was my child, open that bag of chips. And I was like, no, I said, she's learning coordination and so on and so on. I said, she knows how to do it. She's fine. She's just having a bad day with it. And I just remember thinking I had to sit there and feel patience as she struggled with this bag of chips. Yeah, I wanted to help her. I really wanted to help her because everybody was staring at us. And, you know, who knows what goes through people's heads. I'm sure it's not good. And finally, she did get it open. And then everybody in the area clapped for her. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. But whatever. She got the bag open. She sat there content eating those little pieces of her chips and smiling. So I was good with the results. But I had to be patient to deal with other people and patient with her in doing the skill that I could so help her with, and I couldn't, because then she'd always go asking for help for all the things she struggled with, and I didn't want that for her. So it's moments like those, you know, you have to be pulling from the inside, and maybe not because the child's having issues, but because the surrounding environment is having issues. And I knew people were staring at me like I was the most evil teacher ever. And that was kind of hard to deal with, but it's sort of just what you have to do. And so Yeah, you got to learn how to be patient in moments like those. So I guess in some sense, we do have maybe a higher level of patience. But I don't want that to be a stereotype that we have to have more patience with our students. They're kids. They're kids. You know, all kids require patience at some time or another. And that's the reality of it.